On behalf of the Professional Baseball Strength and Conditioning Coaches Society, I'd like to welcome you to the PBSCCS podcast. I'm your host, Chris Messina. All right, everybody, I'm here with my buddy, BJ Foley of the Boston Red Sox organization. BJ, thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate your time. Tell the listeners about yourself, if you would, please.
Yeah, well, I'll start off with saying a longtime listener, first-time caller. That's how these things go, I understand. So rehab strength and conditioning coach with the Boston Red Sox right now. Came from Kansas State University. Worked with baseball and men's and women's golf there. Had a previous stop at University of West Florida, GA'd, got my master's, worked with a bunch of sports, baseball included, ongoing theme in my strength and conditioning journey of baseball. Started out at Cressy Sports Performance, so that's probably where the niche attached itself to me, I guess, or I attached to it, either way, how you want to look at it, but that's my journey to the Sox so far.
Yeah, it's been cool to get to know you in the couple of years that you've been around, and I'm really excited for this one. We'll get into the rehab stuff first, but before we do, what is your best professional baseball story that you have? Either something that makes you laugh, something you're proud of, maybe it is a rehabber that like you know you got healthy and sent them off. Like, what memory sticks out the most thus far?
I think the big one. As you know, a lot goes on at the complex, a lot that goes on that probably can't be shared here. You get a lot of young dudes, first time professionals, Latin American guys, first time in the States. So stuff gets out of hand down there. But obviously there's a good laugh. This one, myself and another rehabber, we kind of watched this go down from afar. Like, it just happened before our eyes. So standing off in the weight room, and we got the shake station across the way. So one of the FCL guys starts making a shake. So he pours in just an ungodly amount of almond milk, like to the brim. And I'm like, this is going to go bad. This is going to be bad right here. So then I start looking out of the corner of my eye, big glob of Greek yogurt, two huge scoops of protein powder. Then he throws in some blueberry amino acids. So I was like, wait a minute. So now I started watching it pretty close. He threw in, I want to say it was fruit punch pre-workout, peanut butter, oats, and topped it off with a Nature Valley bar straight out of the wrapper and hit blend. And then the best part is he mixed it up, poured it in a couple different cups, and handed it out to his buddies as they left the weight room. We named the shake after him. So
yeah, I was going to say, one, did it overflow, or did he somehow keep it all in the blender?
He saved it. Somehow he saved it. That's which incredible. Was monumental.
He was going for like the all-in-one fitness supplement.
the all-in-one peri-workout nutrition. You'd sip on it throughout the workout, caffeine throughout, and then a little protein at the end.
That's incredible. Actually, it's really funny. It's such like a small thing, but just watching guys learn how to use the blenders and like make shakes for themselves is like really a fascinating thing. As soon as you said like you were watching from afar, I was like, oh, this is going to be good. Because the amount of times that you just sit back, you know, kind of cross your arms, lean against like, you know, the wall or something, you're just like, all right, yep, I'm just going to watch how this plays out, see if it works or not. Those usually are the best stories. You're like, I could intervene. Maybe you're an ass for not intervening. But at the same time, you're like, I'm going to see how this goes. And the shake station is always like, you know, guys go over there and they're kind of like uncertain. And then it seems like exactly like your story. Like, they see something and they're like, yeah, I could throw it in there. Like, I could throw it. And then before you know it, there's like 30 things. They forget the top and they explode it all over. It overflows. Like, something goes wrong. And then like one of the buddies steps in to try to fix it for them, and then they mess it up, or they're yelling at them, you're not supposed to put this in there. Like, it's just such an underappreciated thing, but I feel like it's just good for a laugh every year, especially in spring with new young kids coming in, like, oh, we can use a blender. Like, look at all this stuff that's over here. And for us, that corner has so much stuff over there that I've seen some crazy concoctions.
It's incredible. I mean, it's exactly that. Like, you just watch it go down before your eyes. They have all these ingredients at their fingertips, and it's just like, oh, yeah, we could throw that in there. A little bit of that, a little of this.
And then they offer it to you, and you're in this weird spot where you're like, I kind of don't want to drink that, but I also don't want to say no. So you're like, mine is like, oh, I just had one, bro. Sorry. Like, thank you, though. Or like, oh, someone else needs that more than I
do. Yep. That's my classic. I'll always be like, oh, you know who would want that? Is that guy.
He's been that guy dying standing for one. There going like, dude, what? Why? Why did you send him my way? You know who could really use one? Chadwick really needs a shake right now.
He's dying. He needs a shake right now.
That's awesome. And the other point that you make is like, being down in the complex all summer, I'm sure there's just tons of stuff that you've seen. I've never worked that level, like staying at the complex year round, but I've been an extended. I've worked very like lower level rookie ball, and like even there, it's just a lot of life lessons that we're kind of handing out, or somebody is handing out. And it's like, it feels like every summer, or I guess I should say every spring, you come back, and the summer before, they're like, dude, you won't believe the story. Like, this guy had towel duty because of this. This guy had weight room cleaning duty because of that. Like, and you know, it makes for a good laugh and a good, you know, good life lesson. But a lot of those kids are so young, man. They're just high school guys or young Latin kids that just don't know the culture. And you know, we joke about it, but there's another layer of, you know, baseball and life there that, you know, maybe people don't think about. Is just like those kids coming over, they don't know much about our culture, or high school kids. Like, they have to ask to go to the bathroom, and then all of a sudden they're left on their own being a professional athlete. Like, that's a huge jump in life for people, that I think is important for like workers in the complex to understand that like part of your job may also just be like life lessons and dealing with these things that are completely out of the blue with these young kids. I'm sure sometimes it makes for a good laugh, and sometimes it drives you nuts, or, you know, infuriates
definitely,
you.
Definitely both of those things. I can say
yes,
that.
Yes. And I think how you handle those is probably pretty important. But it's just another layer that like you don't even think about. And it's so far removed from the big league level that like, I don't know, sometimes the lessons in those lower levels to me are so important that, you know, they set the stage for those kids in their journey to the big leagues. And, you know, they may not look back on it. They may look back on it, but, some of the stories I've heard, and even some of the kids I had in rookie ball still reach out and be like, do you remember when we did this or when we did that? And, you know, we've come a long way. And it's like, yeah, man, like, you were just a kid. So, I mean, so was I. I was just a kid. I was running on the fly with you. Like, I had no idea what I was doing. Like, not that I do now, but I definitely didn't know when I was, you know, 22 years old in rookie ball in the middle of Tennessee. I was like, what is going on here?
Yeah, it's nuts. I mean, you hit the nail on the head. Like, yeah, they're playing, but they're growing up too. So it's a not what you think when you probably when anyone out there gets their job at the complex. Like, I'm working in pro sports. Like, you are, but there is so much more that comes with that. Good and bad. Good and bad.
Yeah, the like, I got my dream job working for this organization. I'm going to be at the complex. And I'm like, I don't know what kind of dreams you're having, but I can promise you, you have not seen these things in your dreams.
Right.
Some of the stories I've heard, if those are the kind of dreams you're having, not to discourage anybody from going. I think it's, there's a lot of young coaches that I've been around that I think would be perfect for that environment. And it would kind of open their eyes to like, you know, like you said, there's more to just playing. They're growing up, you're growing up, And you're kind of in it together. And something I've heard recently is like life is really just trying to figure things out. Nobody really knows. They're just trying to do the best with what they do know and where they're at. And that level really is like just, hey, figure it out. Like, you don't know how to get to the complex. You don't have a car. Like, sometimes you got to figure it out. Like, and those lessons I think are just so invaluable as you start to move up and, you know, things get taken care of for you. And, you know, there's less and less that you have to do as a person as you move up that, you know, sometimes it's like by the time those kids get to the big leagues, I'm like, man, you got to make your money. Cause if you get into the real world, like, you might be doomed. You know what I mean? Like,
seriously. Seriously.
So yeah. Some of those kids that are just grinders, you know, down at the lower levels that kind of just force their way through the system. Like, those are the kids that are most well equipped to like succeed when things hit the fan in the big leagues. And it's fun to just watch them grow up. And, you know, I'm sure for you, the longer you're in, the more that you see the rehab guys, you know, graduating and you see those young kids moving up and you can say, man, I remember when that guy was here, like making that crazy shake, like, and there he is up in the big leagues, you know, and then you see him, he's like, hey man, remember I still make that same shake. That's what got me to the big leagues. And it's like, no, I don't think it was the shake, man.
That's the best part is that dude had like 3 homers that week.
It was the fruit punch fast twitch.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, do you have more of that? I need it for my shakes. But
that's the kicker.
No, I mean, we get a good laugh out of it, but there are definitely some valuable lessons within there that, you know, if you're listening and you're somebody that's going to a lower level, like those are the things that you're never going to learn in school. You're never going to know until you get there. And then even if you do know that things can happen that are unexpected, you're never ready for the most unexpected one. There's always something that pops up. I never thought I'd see that.
Yep. I can't tell you how many times, like, we as a staff at the complex have said that exact phrase. Didn't have that one.
You just got to laugh. That's all you got to do. Yep. Stand back, laugh about it. And, you know, and that's what it is. But all right. So let's kick it off here with a little bit more serious stuff. What do you believe in within strength and conditioning that others think you are crazy for believing?
I'd say my answer here is definitely biased towards where I've been, like private sector, D2 college, D1 college, at the complex, rehab stuff. But, you know, there's all like throughout all levels of baseball, I feel like there's this push to just get to the next step. You know, like high school kids trying to get scholarships, college guys trying to get signed, minor league guys trying to get promoted. You know, and like baseball as a whole is all, you know, huge metric driven, number driven, exit velos, fastball velos, all kinds of things that you can assign values to. And I think that may have made its way into the weight room a little bit on the strength side with people just like getting very specific with exercises with younger guys, either high school guys or college guys, you know, even some young minor league guys that just, they don't have a huge training age. And so I think the thing that people would say I'm crazy about is that I think general training gets pushed to the wayside a lot sooner than people want to give it credit for. you know, I think that, like I said, there's this rush to produce like big league metrics in 18, 19, 20 year old guys that, you know, we can just slow that down. Like, this is going to come with time, you know, and we've all seen in the weight room, like, these dudes that come in and they just keep putting in the work and putting in the work. Eventually their jump metrics show it, their sprints show it, and that bleeds over into their skill work. You know, I think just patience is key in that. But, you know, I see it all the time with like, we get guys in the rehab group that are either from up from the academy or in a lower level, and you just milk like a goblet squat, a hands-free front squat, a front squat, like, you know, the progression, and this kid's jump just continues to climb. That's like we don't have to put bands on or get the gym aware out or anything like that. You just continue to get him generally stronger, and he's still sprinting, jumping, throwing med balls and doing all that stuff. But as far as the strength work, it's basic.
Yeah, I would imagine that you understand my thoughts on this at a much deeper level, but in general, I agree with you wholeheartedly. And I think it's kind of been a pet peeve of mine for a long time. Like, you see on social media, people like, oh, West Side Method is the best method. And it's like, does that kid really need West Side? Like, yes, you are getting the adaptations you want, but if you're training the peak of the pyramid, like, that kid has nowhere to go. You know what I mean? Like, if you're right, getting him quote unquote big league jump metrics and he's an A ball player, like, where does he go from there? You know what I mean? Like, he's not, once he gets to the big leagues, they're not just going to keep climbing. You know what I mean? Like, at some point there's a limit. And I think the general strength training, just the, you know, the progressive overload, the very basic progressions that have worked and have stood the test of time, for me, those give you a better, I don't want to say base, but base is essentially the word for, like, you know, you can have a longer, more sustainable set of outcome metrics and outputs. And I think there are too many times, I would agree with you here, like, I think there's just too many times that they're trying to push for these certain metrics. You hit the metric, but then fatigue kicks in, or like, you know, I threw 97 in a showcase, but can you throw 97 5 out of 8 days in the big leagues after being on 3 different flights? Like, it's just different. And I think if you have kind of a fallback point of, like I said, a general base or whatever you want to call it, like, you have a better fallback plan. And I had worked with a player this offseason up in Boston, and that was kind of our message, was like, you know, you're going to feel a little bit slower during this period, but we have to build this level of strength for you. And honestly, you just have to put the work in and, like, just trust that it's going to happen. And then when we take the brakes off and we let you go, like, one, you're going to feel like you're flying, and two, like, you're going to be able to sustain your outputs better. And there were points where, like, he was nervous, but I don't, honestly, I never was, you know what I mean? I told him, like, I know what we're doing. I know what our long-term plan is, and I know the work you're putting in, like, we're going to get there. And then by the end, he's like, dude, I feel amazing. And I'm like, yeah, it's like, because we're not chasing just one, you know, peak. We're not, baseball is not like a quote unquote, like a peaking game. You know what I mean? Like, at the time of recording, it's like combine season, right? Like, guys are trying to peak, to run their fastest, to bench their most, to jump their highest. And then they can take a couple of weeks and do whatever they need to do, or they get ready for a pro day, or, like, you know, the draft is further away. But baseball doesn't have that. You have to play every single day. There's very little downtime. There's very few off days. And so, like, if you're great, I hit 97 one time in a bullpen, but typically you're sitting, you know, 1 to 3, like, it's different than if you're consistently sitting 4 to 6, and then every once in a while there's a 7 mixed in. And I would agree with you. I think that's kind of where the game has gone. And then, like, back to my point of, like, you know, is West Side good? Of course, I love West Side. I grew up on West Side. But does the 8th grade kid need that, or can he just hold a dumbbell and goblet squat it and just keep getting better at that, or put a bar on his back and just keep getting better at the back squat, or just, and then eventually, yes, you can switch over to the bands and the chains and things like that. But I think I would agree 100% and more than 100%, you know, everything that I've been going through in my own personal life with this stuff is, like, I think the rush is way too fast for some of these kids. And I think the point that is trying to be made is, like, it's just trying to create a big leaguer in a week is, like, it's not a sustainable model, I don't think.
Yeah. One of my favorite sayings is, you can't make a baby in 5 months.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, no. And I think your point about, can you throw 97? Not once, you know, not on Monday. And again, a couple of weeks from now, like Wednesday night, Friday night, and again on Sunday after we've been on a plane. And it's that's where it's like that slow progression builds the foundation that you stand on, that every time I come out, like, hey, I might not have my best stuff, but it's 4 to 6 and I mix the 7 in, versus like, I got to be locked. I have to be dialed in for the last month, and I'm going to peak on March 2nd at the combine and run my best 40. Like, that just doesn't, this game is not built for that.
Right. And even, I mean, within the NFL, you know, you play once a week, and it's obviously, it's a very demanding physical game, but you know, you have days built in to recover. Baseball is not like that. Starting pitchers are probably the closest to it, but you know, when we would have relievers come from AAA, that was a very big message I would give to them, is they're like, oh, I don't feel like I'm lifting enough in the minor leagues. And I'm like, well, I'm going to tell you, you're going to get used here, especially if you're a 4A guy, or you're a guy bouncing up and down. Like, you will go 5 out of 8 here. You will go, you know, 7 out of 10. You will pitch 3 days in a row sometimes. Like, it's going to happen. We're going to need you to do it. And so sometimes the lifting has to take a back seat. And it's a hard lesson for some of them to learn. And by the end of it, they're hanging, and you're like, hey, I'm here to help you. Like, I'm here to get you through this tough time. But I'm telling you, like, that one magic bullet on whatever, January 27th in the pro day in the showcase, like, it's not the same as, you know, you're in July and you're just grinding to get to the All-Star break, or like, you know, it's August and it's 100 degrees in Kansas City and there's 10,000 fans or something. You know what I mean? It's just different.
Right.
It's just a different set of variables versus, you know, being in a controlled place, getting your velo slaps, you know, rubbing red hot on or whatever it is, you know what I mean? 4 scoops of pre-workout, like, you know, there's a bunch of scouts around, like, it's just a different feel. And it's not to say that that stuff is bad, but I just think it's probably, there's probably a better way. There's probably a more appropriate way. And I would agree with you. I think there's a lot of push to get to specific training that I don't think we need to make. I think maybe more so on the skill side, but even on the skill side, there's, you know, some guys just need reps with the bat in their hand. I had my first year, we had a pitcher. He's a very high priority pitcher in the organization. He was coming out of the Midwest. I think he threw like, you know, I don't know, 20 or 30 innings his senior year because the weather was so bad. And it's like, guy just needs reps on the mound. He's young. He hasn't pitched a lot. Like, he's got to learn the pro game. Like, that's all it is. Like, there's nothing else like physically that he needs. It's just like, he needs to just work. Like, he just needs to be exposed to it. So I think for you, at least the good part about that is like being in the rehab setting and, you know, being down there with the young kids, that's probably a message that you can relay. Is it a fight that you'll always win? That's a different story. But at least like you kind of have the right mindset within that environment that I think helps you probably to be successful with those guys. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, you, a lot of times too, you know, with the younger rehab guys, it's sometimes it is guys that skip that step, you know, so you can, you luckily can kind of walk them backwards into it and show them that like, hey man, I know that doing something crazy on the Kaiser is sexy and probably looks great in a video, but like, we didn't do any of that stuff, and look at what the outcome was. So
yeah, that's the thing, is just like training has, the most successful training has always just been the boring stuff. Like, it really has. It hasn't been like the Instagram stuff. It hasn't been the TikTok stuff. It's just been good, solid training for a long time. And I think that's, I was having this conversation actually the other day with someone. They're like, oh, do you think getting Tommy John helps you throw harder? And I'm like, well, no, I would never like recommend you get Tommy John just to throw harder. But the idea behind it is, because you're not throwing, like, you're just training and you're just having good, solid training for 8, 10, 12, 14 months, however long the process takes. And Sometimes it's not sexy. Sometimes it's really just boring. Sometimes it's really difficult. Sometimes you got to dig deep to push through. But those are the adaptations in my mind that stick a little bit more than like, oh, we just saw this on Instagram, so let's do it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, and absolutely.
Of course, the Instagram videos get the likes and it's cool to see that, but that's just such a small part of a well-rounded training program. And so that kind of leads me into my next discussion point with you. It's just, you know, kind of talking on your position with rehabbers, you know, working with the injured guys, what your day-to-day looks like, how you're managing timelines, and then we can kind of just go from there. But I'd like to just generally kick it off with like what a day in the life looks like, and then we can kind of dive down some rabbit holes if you'd like.
Yeah, absolutely. Day in the life wise, I would say the managing of the schedule is like an absolute art form. Like if I can be at every location that I'm scheduled to be at on time, it is a rare, rare occurrence. I'll just say that. You know, and that's kind of the life of rehab. Like the best plans never work out how you want them to. But that's something that I think in the past year is probably like the greatest skill that I have learned, is just being able to pivot. Having 1, 2, 3 different places that I can jump to, good, bad, however the session's going, and still walk away kind of with a win. And you know, the Tommy John stuff, like it's certainly not easy. There's ups and downs and mental, physical, with those guys, but it's fairly laid out, in terms of the surgeon and them relaying that information to the PTs, them relaying that to me. Everything's kind of planned, you know, and as far as their runs and their lifts, the stuff that I'm directly in charge of, there's not really much that changes based on that. It's a lot of it changes on the throwing. So I don't have much to do with that, but the, like anything return to run, getting guys back, man, that is just, that's the stuff where like, you are thinking on the fly. I mean, you got a general template of what you want to do. And like, here's where guy's been. Here's where I think he can get to this session. And then the path to that is like, could go any which way, and back to where you wanted, never make it to where you wanted that day, make it there the next time. But so, yeah, it's just being fluid with what you want to do. That's huge. That's the biggest piece.
Would you say that's your biggest obstacle? Is the fluidity aspect, the schedule aspect? Is it like trying to be on the same page as everybody, like on the rehab team? Like, is it the mental side of things for those long-term cases? Like, what is the, and maybe it's not just one obstacle, but what is the biggest obstacle or obstacles that you're facing as the rehab strength coach?
Yeah, I think a big obstacle that's not super talked about is the trust factor with the athlete. And I think a lot of times what I see is, say guy, you know, a lot of hamstring injuries, they'll try to manage at the affiliate. First off, and rightfully so, there's no sense in sending a guy back if he's going to be back on the field in 7 days. But a lot of times when those guys come back to the facility, that's when they're in a dark place. Like nobody wants to come back to the complex, obviously. And so, but you know, they get there and I'm, you know, like checking hip range of motion on a guy with a shoulder injury and doing stuff like that, that any person outside of our field would probably like be like, what is this guy thinking right now? Shoulder range of motion on a hamstring injury type stuff. But, you know, and so obviously building that trust up with the athlete as far as, hey man, you know, we're just gathering all the information that we can get. And I think guys originally, when they come back, they're a little bit not shy, but just they're, I can't think of the word that I want here, but they just don't they don't want to give in, you know, like, hey, I've done this. Like I tried to do this. How are you going to be any different for me? And so winning them over is obviously like step one. I think the big thing there, like I said, was education and just trying to get them on the same page as where my thought process is. And that's just like breaking the barrier of, all right, this dude cares about me, cares about my injury, cares about what happened, where I'm trying to get back to. And I think that's huge. If you can build that right off the bat. And then long-term, for some of those longer term injuries, is just like finding ways for guys to win. You know, like TJ guys, obviously they're pretty limited upper body wise, what they can do for a long time, but you can really hammer lower body in that period. And I think to that point you were making earlier about, I would never choose for someone to get Tommy John, but if you can get 9, 10, 11 months of just uninterrupted training, that piece for their development is massive, especially in a game like this, where are they really ever out of season these days? You know, that 10-month training window is monumental. So getting them to add skeletal muscle mass, track and vertical jump, broad jump, anything that just makes them feel like they're making progress towards their goal is massive. And, you know, same thing goes for lower body injuries. If, you know, guys are bench pressing 10 more pounds on dumbbells than they were when they came in, they feel like they win. And then you just keep riding those highs into, all right, we're sprinting tomorrow. Like, we had a huge bench day yesterday. Like, the correlation between those two things is zero, but in that guy's mind, it's 100 right now. And so you just ride that high into like the best sprint session that he's had since he's been down there. And it's great. But yeah, those two things, like find ways to build trust and then find ways to get guys wins and just keep stacking them and stuff, you know, it starts to add up and guys feel like they're moving towards their goal.
Yeah. That's so funny. Like the bench thing, like, now that I think about it, the amount of times that guys, like, it's like an injury that has nothing to do with what they're doing. And then they're like, dude, I hit 12 pull-ups yesterday. It's like, how's your hamstring? Like, oh yeah, that's fine. It's fine. It's fine. But my pull-ups are great. And then, like, because they're feeling good about themselves the next day, they like hit a PR, you know, Nordboard or sprint or whatever, like,
yep,
hit a milestone that's like getting them closer to coming back. And then all of a sudden they're riding that wave. But I would imagine that is a little bit more difficult in like certain periods of time with those long-term ones, right? Like if you have a hamstring, like say it's 4 to 6 weeks, 6 to 8 weeks, whatever the case may be, like you may have a week or two in there where guys are a little salty or not like into it, but like a TJ is months and months and months. And like, there's opportunity for guys to get lost in the shuffle, I think, during those. So do you have similar injuries trained together? Is it just kind of like whenever you have time? Like, I know you mentioned the schedule is chaotic, but like, how do you manage just the fact that there are different time frames for different injuries? And then like, even within the context of the same injury, like if both you and I had Tommy John, like, you may be really motivated to train and I may just be in a dark place where I'm like, dude, I can't do this. Like, I might retire. Because the reality is like that, yeah, that does happen. You know, it's a sad part of it, but it's a reality for us.
Yeah. I think, you know, speaking to the first point about like managing where guys are timeline wise, like that, the position players, it's definitely the hardest. Just because, you know, 99% of the time with a pitcher, it's arm related, obviously. So naturally, like the throwing progression, that is the king. So you're always trying to, you know, you're just always working around that. With the position guys, I think the best way to go about it is almost regardless of injury, just try and get guys that are in similar spots in their running progression. Like, hey, these two guys are doing, we got an ACL guy and a guy who had ankle surgery, both doing agility. Like, right, they're in my group together at the same time. They might be on a little bit different progressions within that. One guy might be reactive, the other guy might not be, but the drill and the cone setup and everything is the same. And this guy's watching, you know, a couple of progressions down the line from him for motivation. And, you know, I think gearing that up, it still makes guys feel like they're on a team. If they're in a group of guys that are in similar situations to them, you know, we have a kid, he went to college in Ohio, grew up in Virginia, spoke no Spanish before he got here. He's in the rehab position player group with kids that only speak Spanish. And me, I'm coaching it, you know, like I'm good inside the weight room setting. Outside of that, like, I know nothing, like weight, body parts that are relevant. And other than that, like Spanish, not my thing, but inside the weight room, I got it. Like, these guys are going back and forth, like communicating, going through me to get words, like talking crap to each other and doing stuff. And it's like, you just, again, things you see at the complex, like you just would never believe that if you weren't there. So I think whether that's, you know, a little bit of a situation that I've walked into, but a little bit of something that I've tried to foster is like keeping guys that are in similar spots together. Just like you said, so they got somebody that they can lean on regardless of where they're at mentally. You know, I think it drives a competitive nature in all these guys. They're all athletes. They all want to compete. You know, so that part's huge. As far as like the second one, you know, where you got like long-term TJ rehabs, you know, those ebb and flow as far as, you know, one day a guy's like, I'm coming back, I'm throwing 100, you know, and a week later he's going to retire. his arm hurts, he's going to retire. You know, again, it's like the strength of the group, number one, and two, like we're very lucky down here. We have mental performance staff on site all the time, and they're, you know, get great relationships with these guys along with other staff members. And, you know, I think it's important as a staff member in that world, whether it's Kevin Avila or PT, myself, Andrew Rigney, another PT, or even something like our FCL strength coach, Ricky DeLuna, these guys will just gravitate towards somebody. And it's like, that's their guy. Like, they might never be out on the field with them. They might have never wrote a program for them, put hands on them or anything, but like, that's their guy. That's their go-to person. And for whatever reason, like, they're in the tank and that guy pulls them out. And so I think that it's a huge lesson as a strength coach getting into this, that like the X's and O's sometimes are just so irrelevant. Especially in the rehab role where, man, like you are fostering this human, and that's going to drive their performance a lot more than X's and O's and sets and reps and stuff like that. So yeah, short term, it's like drive the competitiveness nature, and long term, it's a human game.
All right, everybody, that's going to conclude part one of our two-part interview with BJ. I hope you enjoyed this one. Part two, we'll continue our discussion on rehab and get into some resources for strength and conditioning coaches who are looking to be successful. Three things that I took from BJ in this episode: don't be afraid to slow the training process down for athletes with a lower training age. Finding ways to build trust and stack wins for your athletes will help keep them on the path to long-term success. And having players support each other in the rehab process can help them get through difficult moments. With that being said, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll talk to you again on the next one.